B-Pod Studios.
97.5 The Fanatic.
From Inquirer.com, joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast, our good friend, Mr. Mike Sielski. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Just doing fantastic. Great. Yeah, just great. We're still trying to understand how a coach says, like Doug Peterson said yesterday, he's got to put his players in the best position. Sees a player like Nate Gary mismatched, an ungodly mismatch, and chooses not to call a timeout. What do you think was the better option to go here for either Doug Peterson or Jim Schwartz on that last touchdown to Claypool?
Well, look, I mean, in the moment, you know, you're thinking, okay, maybe this works out and we don't have to waste a timeout. And in the aftermath of a really bad play, everybody can say, well, they should have called a timeout this or that. Of course they should have called a timeout. But, you know, it's never just the one thing, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, Nate Gary is out there because the Eagles don't have better linebackers, and they need to have a linebacker on the field. Why is Nate Gary the only linebacker they can put out on the field? Well, they don't value the position. Why don't they value the position? Because Howie Roseman, and to a great degree Jim Schwartz, who wields a lot of power within the organization, would rather the Eagles spend their resources on the defensive line and other places, like Darius Slay, a cornerback. So, you know, you leave a soft target, that soft, open to Ben Roethlisberger, and he's going to take advantage of it, and here we are.
Now, Mike, one of the things in your article on Inquirer.com from now 2 days ago, right after the game, right after the Eagles lost to the Steelers, that I found interesting was you're talking about the linebacker position, and I always look at it like this. We've been used to almost for 15 years now where the Eagles don't really value that position. And even by that standard and them downgrading that position really ever since Jeremiah Trotter, this seems like the lowest of the low that they've gone to. When you look at Nate Gary, you also look at Duke Riley, who couldn't even get on the field with the Falcons, was a special teams player, and he's a starter for you. And then it seems like your third linebacker is a mix and match of a bunch of different guys. Does this seem like an all-time low, or at least the last 20 years at that linebacking position?
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, go back to, you know, when we talk about this topic, I think, you know, for people who have been fans for a long time, your mind goes back to the early 2000s, right, when Trotter was there and then left, and you had that 0-2 team that everybody thought was going to go to the Super Bowl right up until the moment Joe Juravicius, you know, is chugging down the middle of Veterans Stadium's field, and, you know, Levon Kirkland can't catch him, and, you know, whoever else, you know, Barry Gardner, I guess, was the guy who couldn't catch him either. And, you know, it was bad then, but it's worse now. And, you know, the Steelers were an example of why that strategy doesn't necessarily work. You know, you can't just have a blanket statement of, well, linebackers don't matter as much in the NFL anymore. The Steelers draft linebackers all the time. TJ Watt, you know, look at the group that they have, and their defense is light years better than the Eagles. So some of this is philosophy. Some of the two guys is just the fact that the Eagles, you know, have not drafted particularly well over the last several years. You know, and here we are. We get this situation where you have guys who really shouldn't be out there as starting linebackers, and a smart opponent's going to take advantage of it.
So, Mike, yesterday I'm watching the game, and I rewatching the game, and the play before the Claypool touchdown, the Steelers ran the exact same formation. And on the play, defensively, Nate Gary looks over to Craig James and says, come here, get over here, get on him, which was Claypool. Okay, so I say to myself, wow, they had the right defense on that play because it was an incompletion, but they didn't put that same defense out there the next time. But then at the same time, I'm saying, oh my God, I'm begging for Nate Gary to call on Craig James to go cover somebody. So my thing is the assessment on Jim Schwartz tied into that? Look at these players that he has out there playing for him.
Of course it is, Bobby.
But is it fair? Like, yeah, Mark wants him fired.
I'm out. I'm done.
Seriously.
Well, here's the thing, is that Schwartz wields an awful lot of power in the organization. You know, my colleague Jeff McClain has written about this before, about they give him kind of free rein in terms of how he wants to run a defense, the kind of players he wants. He's able to make suggestions to Roseman and other people in the player personnel office. And Doug's not a defensive coach. Doug wants to run the offense and kind of oversee the team and be the leader in that regard. So, you know, it's one thing to say, well, you know, a defensive coordinator can only play the players he's got. Well, Schwartz, more than most defensive coordinators, has a say in what players get signed, get drafted. I like this guy. I don't like that guy. Here's the kind of system I want to play. And so, you know, it's really hard to kind of extract any one piece of that without the whole thing kind of falling down. You know, this is a philosophical thing. I mean, look, I mean, to me, if Jim Schwartz's defense can only work when the front four are getting pressure and the Eagles have spent out the yin yang to make sure that they have the priciest front four in the NFL. I mean, they spent more money on the defensive line, I believe, than any team in the National Football League. I mean, if that's what it takes for Jim Schwartz's defense to work, then I think you have a problem here, because any team can go out and just spend, a ton of money on a particular position group to make a particular coordinator system work. You know, there is an element of having to take what you have and make the best out of it. And so far this season, I haven't seen Jim Schwartz doing that.
I would assume, Mike, maybe I'm wrong, but I would assume if they're investing that much money on Jim Schwartz's side of the football and giving not just his side of the football, but his scheme specifically for the reasons you pointed out, getting pressure at your front four without blitzing, and it doesn't work, I would assume if they give him that much power, he could have the power to call a timeout at the end of that game with Claypool. I mean, that's not something that's out of the ordinary, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. He's not the head coach.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the things that you encounter. When the offense is playing great, back in 2017, when the offense is playing great and the offseason moves that they make to sign veteran guys like Chris Long works, when it all works together, you don't encounter problems like this. It's only when the rubber hits the road that you have an issue. Well, you know, can Jim Schwartz just call a timeout? You know, does he have the power to do that? I mean, that's an open question in some ways. And if he does it, again, he's technically not the head coach for all the power that he has.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of see where the issues crop up is who's really running things here.
Farzetta in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
We had Avante Maddox on earlier in the show at about 7:30, and from what he told us, it seemed like anybody could call a timeout. I don't know if that's him covering or what it might be, but by his standard, he said anybody could call a timeout. Whether it's Rodney McLeod, whether it's Nate Gary, or anybody in the football field or on the sideline, they could call a timeout in that situation. But not to belabor that point.
But I think you get your and this is a point I made in the column that I wrote, Mark, is that Jim, this is an almost bigger issue that I have. The Eagles, for the 48 hours since this game took place now, we've heard from Rodney McLeod, we've heard from Doug Peterson, we've heard from Avante Maddox. Jim Schwartz doesn't talk until today. And I understand, that people don't want to hear reporters and media members complain about not getting access to coaches and players and things like that. But I, for a long time since he's been here, I have disliked this fact about Jim Schwartz, that he does not address the media until the Tuesday after a Sunday game. And it allows these questions to fester, and it puts people who technically work for him, like his players, out front to try to explain things that he ought to be explaining, okay? And 48 hours after this game is played, people are already going to start moving on to, okay, what are you going to do against the Ravens? You know, what's the rest of the season look like? And it blunts the criticism and the questions that the guy who runs the Eagles defense faces. And I think it's a lousy move. I think it's kind of cheap for him to do this, and I wish he wouldn't, but the Eagles allow him to do this, and here we are.
And it's an interesting point that you make, and going back to your article, you also talk about how somebody else who wasn't mentioned or who wasn't talked to after the game, and that's Nate Gary himself. And you guys have to talk to who they make available for you, and Nate Gary, we still don't have answers to questions on this.
Yeah, again, I don't want to present this as like, oh, the Eagles aren't doing right by us.
No. It's relevant, though, to this story.
By not making these guys available, they should cater to us. It's not a complaint about the situation is what it is. But the bottom line is, what's Nate Gary going to say? Like, you know, oh, Chase Claypool's faster than I am. Like, you know, I guess they should have taken a deeper drop. Like, Nate Gary works for people. He has coaches who are supposed to explain to people why these mistakes happen. And Jim Schwartz doesn't do that after games. And I think it's the wrong thing to do for a lot of reasons.
Mike, you said earlier, you had a quote, make the best of what you have. And I'm going to go to the other side of the ball. Doug Peterson in DeSean Jackson doesn't have a speedster anymore. In Zach Ertz doesn't appear to have the tight end that he had before. I think they're still very usable guys. My question to you is, do you think Doug could use them in different ways or should use them in different ways to exploit their positives and take away what I just said now appear to be their negatives?
Well, DeSean Jackson's got to get on the field first.
Right.
Let's be honest here. You know, the Ertz thing is interesting to me. I don't know what's at play there. And it's very easy to jump to the conclusion that he's not playing well because he wants a new contract. I don't think that's the case. I don't think Zach is that kind of player in person. But I do think to a degree the Eagles are making do with what they have on offense. I mean, you know, look at the receivers they're putting out there. Look at the injuries to the offensive line. And they move that ball. They move the ball well against the Steelers all day, generally speaking, all day, with the exception of the first couple of possessions. You know, once Miles Sanders broke that long run, even though they didn't run the ball much after that, you know, when he got time, was able to find Travis Fulgham and get the ball downfield. And, you know, I think one thing we have to look at here, guys, is, and I've said this since the beginning of the season, people should be looking at this as kind of a quasi rebuilding year for this team. You know, the formula that they have followed in trying to, you know, win a championship and win another championship and all that is their model is the Patriots under Brady and Belichick. And, you know, that sounds crazy, but part of the reason I say that is that there were seasons where the Patriots had just terrible skill position players. Last year would have qualified as one. You know, go back to like 2006 when Rashay Caldwell was their best wide receiver. That team didn't have Randy Moss and Wes Welker and Julian Edelman every single year. But because Brady and Belichick were so great, they made it look like they were never rebuilding. Well, the Eagles aren't that team. And, you know, you're looking at a season where you're going to find out about guys like Fulgham and John Hightower and, you know, Jordan Mailata and people like that. And they're going to get beat most of these games. Now, they may still win the division because the division's lousy. But the fact is that they're not a very good team. They really are kind of trying to rebuild. And the problem with that is there's no guarantee they're going to get it right.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Mike Sielski, Inquirer.com, and the article we're referencing that Mike wrote is under the headline on Inquirer.com, Jim Schwartz deserves the blame for the Eagles' loss to the Steelers. So if you want to check that out, go right ahead from after Sunday's game. To transition real quick from football to basketball, today is the 50th day since Adrian Wojnarowski reported, A, that Brett Brown was fired, and B, more changes we're going to follow in the front office. I haven't heard of any changes yet in the front office. Have you heard any other changes other than Doc Rivers being hired?
Nope. Nope, I have not.
That's what I thought. And then one final one on the Eagles. They're still very much in this division. The NFC East is terrible. I know you're aware of that. Do you still look at them as the favorite to win this division?
In the loosest sense,
exactly.
Favorite, I guess you kind of have to. Mm.
And Mike, last thing for you. Have you ever forgotten your wallet, been out and about, forgotten your wallet?
You know, I don't carry a wallet. I have a money clip. I haven't carried a wallet in a long time. But, yeah, every once in a while, I think once or twice I've done that. I once left my car keys on top of my car, and they stayed on top of the car for, like, several hours before I realized they were out there. So I have my moments.
Were you in the mean streets of Bucks County when that happened? Were you, like, down
no,
South
I was,
Philly?
I was in Almy. I was in the Almy section of Philadelphia.
Look at you, Michael. Good
I
for
did
you.
The same thing.
Mike, always great catching up with you, man. Thanks so much. Great article.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Mike Sielski joining us there.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.